The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
We have a very special guest on the line today, Dr. Michael Batis. He has Doctor of Ministry from Reformed Theological Seminary. He is married and has seven children, and we'll come to that in just a moment here. He has been working in Christian ministry for 30 years, including serving on the International Board of Directors at Joni and Friends since 2000. He's written lots of articles, over 50 articles for publications like Table Talk Magazine and Orlando Sentinel. He currently serves as the Dean of Students at the Geneva School in Winter Park, Florida, and also teaches at Belhaven University in Orlando as an adjunct professor of Bible and Worldview. He is the author of Disability and the Gospel, How God Uses Our Brokenness to Display His Grace. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Batis.
Great to be with you all. Thanks for having me.
So I hear that you're in the path of a hurricane.
Yeah, everybody down here is talking about Irmageddon right now, Irmapocalypse. These are the words we're seeing now. But this is not our first rodeo, as you might say.
So you're not worried.
Happened to us over the years, and we think it's going to drift out a little more to the Atlantic. We'll get real wet, and there might have a bunch of chaff and yard trash to pick up, but we don't foresee any big problems. Now, the islands are getting pounded right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Antigua and Puerto Rico and whatnot, they're getting just pounded. Feel sorry for them.
Great.
Yeah, we'll certainly be keeping you guys in prayer over on this end where things are just very, very dry. Where we are right now, we're struggling with forest fire, so it's a very different struggle.
This is what we've heard, yeah.
Yeah, but we'll certainly keep all of you in prayer.
Well, thank you.
As we get started, I was just curious, when you wrote the book Disability and the Gospel, you didn't write it as a very detached, disinterested third party, did you? You had a very personal vested interest in it.
That's right. It really came out of our oldest child, Jessica. She's now 35 at the time of the book. She was about 30, 31. She was born with a disability. We did not sign up for this, wouldn't have asked for it. We're not proud recipients of it, but disability came into our family, and it has, in many ways, kind of defined our family life. And my own study really grew out of a desire to get answers. What's God doing with all this, and what are His purposes, and what can we learn?
As you work and write in this area, how do you define disability? I've seen you talk about brokenness and disability almost interchangeably. What are your thoughts behind that?
Well, probably one of the more radical things I say in the book is that we're all disabled. Every human being is disabled in some manner, in some aspect. Some of us just hide it better than others. And that's really a product of the fall. You know, since the fall, not only sin, but disease and death have crept into creation. And we're pushing back on that now in the 21st century, 20th century, and 21st century with medicine. But we're still broken people. And I tell people, you only have to live long enough to realize your disability.
I absolutely agree with you. When I read that, I completely agreed. And it reminded me of just the difficulty of this idea of normal, because I think a lot of people want to shoot for this. What's the ideal? You know, what's the normal? And that becomes very elusive, doesn't it?
Normal is technically a mathematical term, meaning the averages, right? The norm. Mm. That's where this comes from. And especially in the West, we have this almost mythological idea of what is normal. It's a very elusive thing. It's very tough to nail down. I've been exposed to more radical people in the disability movements from the secular side. And they actually talk about normates.
Normates.
All you people who are all so concerned about normal, and they're like, you know, this is who I am, get over it. They actually talk about people who are disabled and people who are temporarily able-bodied, which, you know, is kind of that's an interesting way to think about things.
Right.
So normal is a label that those of us who like who we are and think things should be like us kind of define this is what's normal.
this really actually got us thinking on this topic. It was recently in the news in Iceland, as I'm sure you're aware of. They've almost eradicated Down syndrome. I believe with your daughter, she has an extra chromosome, was it?
She has extra material on her eighth chromosome.
Okay.
Down syndrome is actually an extra chromosome. Hers does not have a name. It's just her.
Okay.
The study we've done shows that probably about 95% of chromosomal anomalies are things like Down syndrome. There's a few others with names, DeLange syndrome, and a few others, trisomy 18. And the other 5% are all the other chromosomal anomalies combined. And so we fall into a very, very small slice of chromosomal anomalies. Hmm. And it's just her. There's no other like her. She's not like Downs in that sense. She's actually much more severely disabled. She does not walk or talk or able to care for herself in significant ways.
When you read this report that came out of Iceland, what were your immediate reaction, your thoughts?
That Iceland will be a much poorer place for their efforts. People with Downs bring, with their brokenness, bring something with them that I think cultures need. And let's be honest with ourselves. In the West here in the United States, we're doing a pretty doggone good job of doing the same thing they're doing in Iceland. Probably over 90% of pregnancies that are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted, and that's a very sad thing. I've written somewhere else that, and I get myself in trouble with some of my theological friends with this. This is just my anecdotal observation. I think people who live with Down syndrome are certainly more fallen physically, but I think maybe less fallen spiritually than the rest of us. They are so willing and so quick to respond to the love of God and to the claims of the gospel. They so willingly embrace a Savior. And they're just people who love with an unconditionality that most of us don't have. And they enrich the families where they live and the churches where they worship and the communities where they live and work. I think anybody associated with people with Down syndrome would say that. So for Iceland to try to eradicate them is to really impoverish themselves from something that a real blessing that they would otherwise receive.
That's a very countercultural kind of notion, right? Because we think of people with disability as a burden on society and it holds us back. But you're saying actually they enrich us and we do this to our own detriment.
Well, let's be very clear. It's not easy. It's hard. It is a burden in the sense of health issues. Downs, people who live with Downs come with some health issues.
Right.
Certainly some cognitive issues. Some are more severe than others. It is hard. And it takes a lot of work, and there's a lot of expense involved, and there's, you know, therapies and special ed, very expensive stuff, no question about it. It is not easy, but anything of value, I think, that we learn from is from hardship, right? We don't learn from contentment. We don't learn from ease and from luxury and from things that are nice and comfortable. We learn from difficulty and from failure and from defeat. This is the story of the Scriptures. I think in the West, we try to hide ourselves away from these things. We try to eliminate risk, and we try to eliminate difficulty and disability. Because pragmatically, yeah, it's hard and it's expensive, and we want things to be easy and spend our money on other things.
Right.
Michael, I just wanted to read a quote from your book here and then just have you expound on it a bit. It says, a major step toward appropriating the transferring power of the gospel and toward ministry among the disability community is seeing one's commonality with those who live more visibly broken lives than we do. You've talked about difference in degrees.
Yes.
How does the gospel humanize them, people with disabilities?
Well, the first thing I tell people when they, you know, ask about my daughter, I say she has a name and she's a person. Don't patronize her. Don't try to avoid her. Try to get to know her. She is a human being made in God's image. And this is something that the church needs to be much better at. We need to affirm that every human being is made in God's image. And Amen. We're all broken. It's really just a difference in the degree of brokenness. And that's why I say our culture likes to say those kinds of people.
Yeah.
Put them in a different category of being altogether. No, it's not a different kind of people. It's just a different degree of brokenness in a spectrum. And when we see them as fellow human beings and fellow journeyers on Earth, fellow people who need the gospel and who need the good news of Christ and the community of his church, that puts a whole different light on it.
Michael, I want to press you on this point. I want to tease this out because as we've been talking with different people and thinking through this issue, I find that there is some ambiguity and some confusion, and I'm wondering where you land on this, going back to this idea of, in some ways, we romanticize disability. At least I've seen this in the church, where I see people, they don't want to say that a disability is a bad thing. And I'm wondering where you land on that. Now, I want to tease that out in a bit, in a moment here, but first, let's just start with that. Would you say that a disability is a bad thing for the individual? I know we've been talking about the people who benefit from it, that are learning to sacrifice and to serve those people. But what about the person that's in the disability?
That's a great question. My friend Johnny Tata, who is the founder of Johnny and Friends, she would say her diving into the Chesapeake and breaking her neck and becoming a quadriplegic 50 years ago was a bad thing. It was a stupid thing. It wasn't an evil thing. She didn't intend to do it, but it was a bad thing. Would she have chosen a life of quadriplegia? No. Would my wife and I have chosen to have a child with a chromosomal anomaly that makes her profoundly disabled? No, we would not have chosen that. In that sense, it's fallen. There's a difference between bad and evil, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things are bad. And we'd say, yeah, there are disabilities that are really, really rough and very difficult to live with. And I don't know of anybody who would choose them. That said, this is where we look at the providence of God. God is sovereign. He's not surprised by these things. And in his plan, the difficult things are where we learn.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't want to romanticize disability at all. It is hard. Mm. You know, my friend Johnny would tell you, it's been so hard for 50 years, and it doesn't get easier. And my wife and I said the same thing. It doesn't get easier as our daughter gets older. It gets more difficult.
So I want to press this a little farther. Mm-hmm. I have a niece who has cerebral palsy, and I asked her recently, you know, if you could get out of your cerebral palsy, you know, if you could walk, if you could ride a bike, if you could run and jump, would you? And of course, she says, yeah, of course. I'd love to be healed from cerebral palsy. So here's a question for you. First of all, I think you would agree with me that, yeah, that would be a good thing for somebody to be healed from cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask this question about your daughter. Hopefully this isn't too personal. If you could mend the damage from having this extra material on her chromosome, would you want to do that?
No question. There's no question. Mm. I mean, we still look at her life and imagine what would have been different if. I mean, that's a very human thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's 35, and we'd think, well, she'd probably be married, she'd probably have kids, you know. yes. And I think in that regard, I look at it the same way as cancer.
Mm.
Do we embrace cancer? Well, some authors like John Piper said, don't waste your cancer, let God use that in some manner. But
right.
If we could avoid it, would we? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of the fall. It tears our bodies apart. It brings death. Disability inhibits. It limits. In God's upside-down way of working things in the world, he uses those things that limit us to bring freedom in other ways that we could never have anticipated or orchestrated ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see that's how he uses disability. Does that mean God smiles on disability? No. Here's a line that Johnny Tata uses a lot. God uses things that he hates to accomplish things that he loves. And she says she can't wait for when she gets to heaven to throw her wheelchair into hell.
See, and that's something I want to ask you about, because we have literally met Christians, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, that would see this disability as a good thing, and in fact would even argue that this is something that you take to heaven with you.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Have you come across this?
No, I've not. Okay. And by the way, I appreciate your line of questioning. This is very good for you. This is challenging, and it's good stuff. No, I've not come across people who have said, yeah, this is what God... it's one thing to say God glorifies himself through this weakness. Yes, he does.
Yes.
But to say this is what why I will take to heaven? No, this is, I mean, you know, heaven, the scriptures talk about no more crying, no more tears, no more, you know, the lame will leap like deer, the mute will sing. I mean, no, the scripture is very clear that disabilities will fall away and we will be, you know, what we could not be here. And by the way, that's for all of us. we will be what we could not be here. Again, that's in degree. But for all of us, it is going to be a infinitely greater existence than what we have now.
Yeah, I, for one, am really looking forward to not having to deal with my eczema. I'm so done with it. Yeah. But,
well, and you know, let's not minimize those things, because mm-hmm. the things that people struggle with for them are 100%. You know, I've got an intestinal condition that has limited me with diet and has hospitalized me a couple of times. It's mm-hmm. not at all what my daughter lives with. It's not at all what somebody with cerebral palsy lives with, or Johnny with her quadriplegia. But for me, yeah, it's been a limiting thing. Mm-hmm. We all look forward to being released from this tent of the body. And not just from sin, but from the afflictions of life on earth. There's no question about that.
I think that this is maybe where the challenge comes for people then, is to see this tension that there is actual good that can come from disability, and it can teach us a lot about holiness and about God's character and in even refining ourselves. But at the same time, it's something that should be fought against, in the same way that, yeah, cancer can teach me a lot and I can grow close to the Lord through it, but that doesn't mean that I shouldn't fight cancer.
That's right. We can learn a lot from persecution, but I don't see Christians saying, please, flog me, please. Right. That's kind of sick, actually. That's kind of demented in some fashion, isn't it? Mm. Do we learn from persecution and difficulty? Yes. Jesus says, take up your cross, deny yourself, follow me. Well, I think disabilities allows people to do that in a way that they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
So when I read this article that came out of Iceland, I mean, one of the thoughts that went through my mind is I just think it's so sad that our first port of call to help people is to kill people. You know,
yes.
And not, instead of thinking, how can we make sure that an extra chromosome doesn't get added to somebody's DNA? Tell me what you think on this. But, you know, instead of trying to think, okay, how could we make sure to have healthy children, instead of trying to think of, okay, how can we kill unhealthy children? Right. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. This is the Western way of thinking, is to eliminate the problem. Until we can solve the problem, at least eliminate the problem. You know, until we can solve cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, let's just eliminate those people. And that's a very sad thing.
It's dehumanizing.
It's dehumanizing. They're still people made in God's image. They still have inestimable worth and value as human beings. And, let's go after solutions to, you know, I think we have less cerebral palsy because that's trauma during birth and that lack of oxygen during birth that damages, you know, the body, the brain. We've done better at solving that with cesarean section, okay? Lots of other things we've solved that can bring debility and disability through childhood with diseases and whatnot. Those are all wonderful things. None of us would go back and say, well, you know, let's get more kids with whooping cough and mumps because that's actually a good thing to help them become stronger characters. No, we wouldn't do that. If we can find solutions to chromosomal issues even, I mean, that's getting down to that level of DNA and whatnot. That's very difficult. I'd say, yes, let's do that. Here's a good example. The Human Genome Project really solved some things, but even opened up some other Pandora's boxes, like Huntington's, I think I talk about in the book. They're able to spot the Huntington's gene, but they still don't have any cure for it. And so it's strictly passed on through genetic inheritance in families. And it's a terrible disease, but its onset is at 30 or 35 or 40. And so a lot of people with that gene in their family will not have children, or will have abortions of children that test positive. They'd rather eliminate the person than have the person grow up, and maybe at 25 or 30 or 40, they're going to have this amazing discovery or contribution to human life that they wouldn't have because they're aborted, because we don't give them life at all. And so there's that Pandora's box of, now we can identify it, but we can't help it. Well, the first step to helping us, I'm sure, is identifying it. And if we could change the Huntington's disease chromosome gene, let's do it, because that would make their lives better.
My wife and I have taken in a number of kids that have had disabilities, and I can say we didn't know the extent of the disabilities when we first got the kids, but as time has gone on in the process, you know, it's always been hard. It hasn't been easy. It's refined me in the sense that I was not a very patient person before, but it really developed that character in me. And, you know, it's still refining. I could tell you that. But how, what would you say to the people that come into these situations? Their child is born this way, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be easy for the rest of the kid's life. How would you address that issue for those people?
I would say you must find a community in the church that will be your support. And too often, the church is just one more barrier that, that families encounter. Either social or, you know, some kind of emotional barrier where people just don't know what to do. And so they kind of put their hand up in a metaphorical way and say, don't come. Families with disabilities need the church. They need the support of the community of Christ to walk with them. And they need to keep the long view in mind that, that God is in this and God is not surprised and God is not absent. And you take one day at a time.
Yeah, that support for us has been key for sure, inside the church and outside the church. And, it, you know, especially our small group has just taken us and, you know, given us a lot that way. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm just curious then, one of the critiques of the church that many people have put forward is that we're really not good at integrating those with disability into the life of the church. We just don't know how to identify.
Or we're not willing.
So what would you say to, like, how do we, do you suggest that we move forward as a church in terms of integrating everyone into the life of the church, including those with disability?
Yeah, I think the big problem in many churches is that people expect you to get better. You know, they'll pray for you, they'll support you, and then you get better and you go on with life. But with disability, it doesn't get better, it doesn't get easier, it continues, and that that chronic difficulty wears people out. And a lot of people just don't know what to do with that.
Right.
And it's really signing on for the long run to walk, to limp forward together in life. And I think churches need to say, who can we start with today? Who's in our midst today? Who do we know who's not in our midst, who could be in our midst today? And I just tell people, look who Jesus hung out with. Let's be like Jesus. Let's be, the church should be his, following him. He hung out with people who are blind and lame and deaf and the rejects, the marginalized in the society. And that's who needs to be in the church. And so I think you start with where you are and, and deal with, you know, minister to the people who are in your midst. And I tell them there's very practical things you can do. Like, you know, people say, I don't know what to say. And so when somebody comes into my church when there's obviously a disability in their family, I just kind of say, so tell me, what do I need to know about your daughter? Or what do I need to know about you? How can I help you? Glad you're here. And that just kind of is a welcoming, tell me, teach me. I want to learn from you. And that's almost all you need to do. And from there, it takes care of itself.
I see Terry sitting over there really nodding his head really hard.
Well, because we've all had experiences with disabled kids of going to churches where you just, they look the other way. They walk by without talking to you. And you want people to engage you. And that's how we actually measured where we were going to be at church. When people actually addressed our daughter, looked at her and said, good morning, young lady. Nice to have you here.
Right.
We thought, okay, we're home.
Is amazing how much
to looking
fear.
At us and talking about her. You know, you don't want to look at them and talk about the other person. You want to look at the person, address them as a human being, whether they can answer you or not. And that shows they're viable.
It is amazing how much fear keeps people. And I don't know what all it is, right? I mean,
it is fear. It is primarily fear of saying something stupid. I get that. It is. And people don't want to say something stupid, so they don't say anything at all. And that's why I say, just say, hello, what do I need to know? Tell me about yourself.
Right.
And that just allows them to set the table and say what they want to say. And you go from there. Or you just say hello and pat on the shoulder and shake a hand or, you know, whatever you can do. And make the first move. And then they'll make the second move. Because we learn from each other and we have to walk together with each other in that regard.
Can we just talk a minute for a minute about kind of leadership in the church? I've always felt that maybe there should be more courses in at a master's level or something with leadership, you know, going into the church, because I don't know if the church has addressed this as well as it should. And moving forward as a church, you've listed a number, or moving forward as leaders, you've listed a number of key questions in your book. And a couple is just, do I harbor stereotypes about people with disabilities? Do I feel at all superior to people with disabilities? But you said the most important question is, do I consider them as liabilities to my church? Black holes of energy and resources better spent elsewhere.
Those are words to pastors, yeah.
Yeah. I our church here, I think, is doing a great job. We have a department called Imagine Ministries. And, they are getting in on this. But I feel that as time goes on, the church is going to be inundated with a lot of disabilities moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a reality that, pastors look at the pragmatic, they have to. And families with disabilities, generally speaking, are taxed out financially with extra expenses. They're not a big donor base, people with disabilities. And yet they need a lot of resources and a lot of help. And that's the reality. It's a risk. They're a risky group of people to associate with, but they always have been. I think when we look at that in that regard and say, it's worth the risk because this is what Jesus did, and then just go from there.
In your experience at different churches, first of all, what were you experiencing as a couple, and I mean even still do, with your daughter? And what sort of things did the church do, did you find, that was very beneficial? With, I'm sure, days in which you came to church just feeling completely spent.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it might be helpful to know, too, we've adopted several kids, and like you, did not know there were some disabilities there. And so it's not just been our daughter, but a couple of other kids as well. And yeah, you're spent. There's a lot of Sundays you were successful to get people in the car, much less in the building. And you get there and you're just tired. And that's where you need that community of support who can minister to your child when you can't, or just minister to you when you've got nothing left to give.
Do you find that in society in general, that people make a difference in disability, particularly from a physical disability versus a mental disability? And it seems to me that in our culture today, it is the mental disabilities that people really have a hard time understanding and being unsure of what to do, and particularly when we see what a spectrum that can be of mental challenges. I think it's so key when you say that we're all broken.
Right.
Instead of trying to think of, oh, there's some of us that got it all together, and there's others that are broken, just no, we're all broken. And that understanding where in that brokenness you are, I think, is helpful.
I've got a good friend I've traveled with, Mary Jane Pontaine, who lives with cerebral palsy. And part of her story is, she grew up saying, well, at least I'm not mentally retarded. And in God's humorous way of doing it, he kind of led her eventually to working with people with mental capacity issues. That's her ministry, is with people with mental disabilities, because she's not retarded. She lives with severe CP, but she's a conqueror, and she's working with that group, because there is that, at least I'm not mentally retarded. I think the bigger, even bigger than that divide between the physical and mental disability, is that whole realm of mental illness.
Right.
In our culture, that's the really tough one that churches have a tough time dealing with, is mental illness. And that's a huge, unspoken, unmet population of people. Which is a whole different realm. It's not mental disability, it's mental illness, but it is a severe, broken effect of the fall that needs the love of Christ and redemption and hope just as much as anything else. And I see that that's even a bigger challenge for the church.
I have a question that is maybe a bit unusual for this kind of topic, but I've seen that some people with disability, everybody has a way of coping with the current state that they're in. And I'm just curious as to your thoughts on the proper role of humor when you're trying to make light of it, to just kind of, get a load off of your shoulders, just even for the moment. What are some do's and don'ts, do you think, when you're trying to make light of the situation, or do you?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think it's almost the same as with our tensions in our culture with race. Within that race, you're allowed to make humor about race. Mm. But coming from outside, it's rather offensive. and this has been my sense in the disability community. I don't live with what's defined as a disability, technically speaking. I hang around with a lot of people who do, but I've got a child with disabilities. I see my friends who live with disabilities joke about their disabilities, but if I were to joke about that with them, that could become offensive. Mm-hmm. If they invite me in with that, yes, but it's not my place to make a joke about it because it's their life. It's how they're defined, and so that's a very careful distinction we have to make.
I really appreciate that because I myself am Korean, and I used to live with a roommate that I was really close with, and he, he's Caucasian, and so we used to poke fun at each other all the time, but we were only able to do it because we had that really solid relationship, and I, in fact, right, started making fun of myself first, and so then he joked about chopsticks and things like that, I remember coming home one day, he had made dinner for me, and there was a bowl out with chopsticks in it, and I thought it was really sweet, except he told me later that he had made soup. We had a good laugh about that. So what I'm hearing is it's a lot like that when you have that, when you're invited into that community, to have that kind of a closeness, that sort of a yes, in a sense, the permission to make light of the situation, then you can
right
feel free to do that. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen that. John and Friends has pioneered these things they call family retreats, where families with disabilities come together and just rest and are ministered to for a week, and they can joke with each other about their family situations. Hmm. I've seen that happen. The volunteer support staff probably can't enter into that yet because they're not as close to the families yet. They're just there to support and serve for the week. I've seen coworkers at Johnny and Friends who are not disabled but have walked with Johnny for years and years and years, and they can joke lightly about things because Johnny jokes about it. Mm-hmm. And she invites them into that. But yeah, it's a very careful thing.
Okay, we're running out of time here. Did you guys have any last questions to ask?
Well, I was just going to ask about, as the church moved forward, I was watching one of your videos, and you mentioned, or you quoted Julian the Apostate. I mean, the church has always been known to minister to people like this, but it mm-hmm. seems like mm-hmm. in our church these days, in our culture, the individualism has moved into the church a lot. I don't think we're ministering to these disabled people, mental health illness, that kind of stuff, as well as we should. Again, how do you see us moving forward?
I think we have to move out of our comfort zones. And John Piper often says mission is moving away from comfort toward need. And I think we need to move away from comfort toward those who are more needy than us. I think the first step in that is to not patronize and to realize I'm just as broken in different ways, whether it's psychological or emotional or spiritual or physical or mental. I share brokenness, and our nearness, me with my daughter, is far closer than my nearness with God and His perfection. I'm far more like her than I'm like Him. Hmm. And if we can see ourselves like our disabled friends, that gives us that place to start then to say, let's walk together. But it really does mean denying ourselves our comfort level. It doesn't mean moving away from our affinity groups and our peer groups that are so comfortable and easy to be with.
It reminds me of Christ's words to take up our cross and follow Him. In yes. our culture of narcissism, that's about the last thing people want to do.
Absolutely. That is the big challenge in the West, in the church. And this is why I tell people, go overseas. Get out of the United States. Go to a third world country. Do a short-term mission trip. See how the rest of the world lives. And one of the things you'll see when you go to a third world country is you'll see people with disabilities everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have the support systems we have. We do a wonderful job of hiding them here. We put mm-hmm. them into care facilities and group homes and kind of out of sight, because they really bother our sense of who we are as a Western world of comfort and luxury and prosperity. I say go to a third world country and see that disabilities are everywhere, and then come home and realize, you know what, they're here too. Mm-hmm. Why can't we find them? Well, they can be found. You just have to go look for them, and that's our calling, I think, is to go find them.
Amen.
Well, Dr. Bates, we're out of time here, but thank you so much for joining us on this show. We really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. And like I say, I love the conversation. You all are going in the right direction with this. It's good stuff. Very challenging.
All right. So to our listeners, please do go to wherever it is that you purchase books and check out Dr. Bates's book, Disability and the Gospel. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now. We'll be right back.